Welcome to Talk with History. I'm your host, Scott, here with my wife and historian, Jen.
Hello.
On this podcast, we give you insights to our history-inspired world travels, YouTube channel journey, and examine history through deeper conversations with the curious, the explorers, and the history lovers out there.
Walk, children.
Today's episode is a special one. We're taking a deep dive into the life and legacy of Harriet Tubman, the iconic conductor of the Underground Railroad. We're heading straight to the source. We recently traveled to Dorchester County, Maryland, to visit the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad National Historic Park, including the very spot where Harriet was born into slavery. In this episode, we'll explore her early years, the daring escapes that she led, and the network of brave individuals who risked everything to fight for freedom. We'll also take a virtual tour of the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Visitor Center, where powerful exhibits and artifacts shed new light on her incredible journey. So whether you're already familiar with Harriet Tubman or just learning about her for the first time, this episode is for you. Get ready to be inspired by the courage, resilience, and resolution of the Moses of her people. Walk, children. All right, Jen. So we didn't even realize it, but we visited the Harriet Tubman Underground Railroad Center, Visitor Center, on the anniversary of her death, March 10th.
Yeah, it was like the Harriet Tubman Day.
Yeah, like we saw all these signs as we were driving up. Yeah. We're like, oh no, did we unintentionally come and visit like on a super busy day? And we were actually there the day after.
The day after. So they must have had a ceremony the day before Harriet Tubman Day.
Like a Saturday.
Which was a Saturday to commemorate her new stamp, because there's a new stamp coming out with her image on it. And so we got there on a Sunday. And we were lucky. And so we got there on Harriet Tubman Day, which is the day she died. And what's interesting about that is the day she died quite possibly might be the day she was born.
That was very interesting.
So she dies March 10th, 1913, and she's born circa 1922. And some researchers in the past, I'd say 10, 15 years, found a ledger where her enslaver had paid a midwife for the birth of a child from her mother. And it was dated like March 15th. And so people believe that she might have been born March.
Right around that time.
Because he might have probably paid her five days after. So yeah, it's amazing. That would be her 91st birthday. If she were to.
That's pretty incredible. Now, we went up there to make a video for us from Norfolk. It was about 3.5 hours, but got to drive up the eastern shore
of
Maryland.
So what's so unique about the area is this very waterway intense area.
It's a beautiful area.
It's beautiful, but because of driving, it doesn't make it easy to drive.
Right.
And it's outside of Annapolis. It's outside of D.C., it's on the other side of Maryland in that kind of watery, island-ish looking part of the state where you're kind of like, what's over there?
Yeah.
And that is where she was born. That's where she escapes enslavement for the first time. That's where she goes back and rescues her family. And she understands that waterway area so well, having been raised there, that she's very good about navigating that and getting people out of enslavement through there.
And I can see, in an area like that, the eastern shore of Maryland, that has so many water inlets, and if you didn't know your way around there, you could get lost and have to double back and triple back, and it would take you extra time just to travel from one location to another. If you were going to try to travel from, let's say, Washington, D.C. to somewhere on the eastern shore of Maryland, if you didn't know the way, or if you weren't traveling on one of the main roads, it would be incredibly difficult.
Oh, absolutely. When you think of, let's use John Wilkes Booth, when he tries to escape and go just right across the waterway from Maryland to Virginia, he doesn't. They get lost in a waterway and just go westward back into Maryland. Yeah. They don't even cross into Virginia because they don't understand the waterways there. And a lot of those waterways where Harriet Tubman was born were actually dug and made by enslaved people.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
So her people made them. And I talk about this as well. Her father lived on a different plantation than her mother. And a lot of their family was sold into different families, enslaving families in the area. But they were allowed to visit each other. And she became very well acquainted with the topography of the area and the waterways of the area because of that from a very young age.
Now, that was one question I had in my head when I was making the video. Was that kind of the norm of the time for enslavers to allow their enslaved to travel to go visit family? Or was it more like they were traveling with the master of the household for business purposes and that just they happened to go get to see their families?
Depends, right? Depends on how close the enslaver, the overseer holds tight to their people.
Yeah.
What kind of happens and what I've learned doing my research is a lot of enslaved are sold out to other plantations, yeah, especially during working season, because you need more hands than you actually have to do certain things. So you help each other out. Okay. And my slaves will come plant your land, and then your slaves come plant my land, and those slaves will go plant this land.
So that's a little bit of how that works.
So that's more how that worked.
Okay.
Plus, what I've also seen is on when crops weren't in the ground and you could get a certificate of travel. Remember that happened with that lynching site that I investigated?
Right.
That was during January because there would be no crops in the ground wintertime. So sometimes you might get a travel certificate to go see your family if it was close by. And sometimes enslavers did that because it kept you satisfied. It kept you staying in your confinement. It kept you not trying to run away. Plus, family also tethers you to the area. And if you do have people who run away, they're running away from more than just enslavement. They would be running away from their family. And so to keep family and to keep a tie to your family there is also benefits the enslaver. So to help facilitate seeing your family helps keep people in that lifestyle.
Yeah. And again, I just thought that was so interesting that Harriet Tubman being allowed to travel and to know that area of mm-hmm. Maryland so well, the Eastern Shore, that is essentially what gave her some of the skills that she needed later on.
Yes. And they used her labor very young. She was a young girl when she was checking traps along the shoreline for this certain type of like a mink rat, and its fur was better in the winter fur, right? And so as a young girl, she could get into these waterways and check these traps for the fur traders. And it was very hard labor for a child, but because she's enslaved, they use her labor to do that. So it's another way that she gained an understanding of all of these waterways because she's checking these traps as a young girl. So one of these horrible things that she has to do as a young child being enslaved, but will benefit her as a conductor on the Underground Railroad.
Yeah. So now let's step back a little bit. Mm-hmm. We jumped in there because she's such an interesting character and she's done some incredible, incredible things. But so she was born in, you said, 1822.
In 1822, she's born Araminta. Araminta Ross.
Yeah, and they called her Minty.
They called her Minty.
That was her nickname.
As she names herself Harriet Tubman. That's the name she wants to give herself because she doesn't want her enslaved name. And she's born to enslaved parents, her mother, Harriet, who they call Rit Green, and Ben Ross. And Rit was enslaved by the Brodus family and later her son, Edward. That's where the marker is. That's where we stop. That's where they say is the birthplace of Harriet Tubman. She's not quite born there. She's born more when you go to the visitor center and you cross the bridge to go see the marker. She's born more where that bridge area is, where the waterway is. But that's where her marker is. Harriet Tubman thought her birth year was 1825 and her death certificate lists 1815. Her gravestone lists 1820. But again, historians have found 1822 right. in the ledger.
In the records.
Yeah, in the record. That was found in 2004. The visitor center is amazing. It's free. It's run by the National Park Service. We had got there on a Sunday in March, which is Women's History Month. So it was great to go there at that time. But I just want people to know it's closed on Mondays.
Oh, okay.
So it's only open Tuesday through Sunday. So if you're listening to this, it's closed on Mondays. Don't be like me going to Dr. Mudd's house and coming to a locked gate.
And definitely don't drive there if you're too low on gas.
Yeah.
You make sure you get gas a decent ways before you get there, because Eastern Shore, it's great. There's plenty of kind of services on the drive out there. But it's not the 95 going between Richmond and DC.
It's expensive.
It's a little more expensive, and those gas stations get a little bit more spread out.
Yes.
And then when you're driving around, like when we were driving around from the visitor center over to the marker, you're just driving some side country roads.
Yeah, exactly. It's open 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. and the address is 4068 Golden Hill Road in Church Creek, Maryland. So you're in that, like you said, rural Maryland area, and the National Park Visitor Center, it's a really great facility. It has a great movie that you can watch there. It really talks you through her life, has a lot of things that kind of show you what built her and changed her life, and it shows you more kind of hands-on exhibits. But it was really a neat place to go, especially for our children to, I think it's safe for kids. I mean, it's not too much for them.
Oh, yeah. It's super kid friendly.
Yeah, super kid friendly.
And even one of the things that I actually really appreciated, because they go a lot of kind of explaining her family history and kind of all her family figures, but they weren't afraid to emphasize her youth when she got injured,
yes.
when she got hit in the head by that weight.
Yeah, so we actually go there. That was very important to me. That's another place that you can go that is there waiting for you. It's called the Bucktown Village Store, and it's at 4303 Bucktown Road in Bucktown, Maryland. Easy. You just really got to remember one word. Bucktown, because it's like Bucktown Village Store, Bucktown Road, Bucktown, Maryland. So this is the store. It's really at the end of the road from where the Brodus Plantation was, where her marker is.
About a mile from the marker.
So it's very easy to find. It's at the T in the road. It's the store right at the end of the T. And it's a little yellow store. She was there in 1835. And she was, who knows? I think she was there probably buying or purchasing things for her enslaver, and another boy had run away from his plantation, and his overseer had come into the store to get him, to catch him basically, and he was trying to grab this boy, and he threw a 2-pound weight at the boy to hit him with this 2-pound weight, and it ended up missing the boy but hitting Harriet in the head. Now, a 2-pound weight, they use these kind of weights and measures on the table when you're buying things, because you're going to buy 2 pounds of flour or two pounds of sugar.
In the visitor center, they show you an example, and it's a good size. It's, think of one of those skinny Coke cans, little small ones,
but
about that size.
Solid weight.
It's solid. I mean, it's 2 pounds in that in a tiny little size. If you're throwing that at someone, it's going to do damage.
So when you're like, well, how did he have a 2-pound weight? Because that's how if you're buying 2 pounds of flour, 2 pounds of sugar, they'll put that on one side of the weight, like a measure, and then they put that whatever you're buying on the other side, so you have bought 2 pounds. So that's what he grabs off the counter to fling at this kid. Like, how terrible is that? Fling this 2-pound weight at this kid. He misses the kid, hits Harriet right in the head, and it busts her skull, and she's bleeding, and they take her back to the plantation. They basically have to carry her back. She lays in a bed for 2 days, and eventually they just start making her work again. But it's that moment that she starts to have visions of God. Like, that's when she starts to hear God speaking directly to her. And you can call it what you will, whatever's happening. She is having seizures now start happening to her as well. But this is what really inspires her to start this whole freedom campaign and to really feel, I guess, empowered to do all of these things she's going to do in her life. She is more than just an Underground Railroad conductor. She's going to be a spy for the Civil War. She's going to become a nurse during the Civil War. She's going to lead a military militia during the Civil War. And her belief in herself to accomplish all these things is because she believes The Lord is speaking directly to her. So I think that's just so phenomenal. And to be at that store on that porch where that happened to her is just really amazing and powerful for this heroine of American history. So it's there for you if you want to go. Those places for us were very important to visit. So the visitor center, the marker, and then the store.
Yeah, and it was amazing to me. One of the things in the entryway to the visitor center is they have a small bust of Harriet Tubman. And it doesn't look like too much, but as I was walking on my way out, one of the National Park
the Rangers. Guides,
the Rangers, mm-hmm. said, "Hey, what's significant about that bust?" I was like, "No, it just looks like a bust." He's like, "Well, it's 5 feet high, and that's how tall she was."
I know.
They said she was only 5 feet tall. So I went over there and stand next to it, right? And 5 feet tall is not very tall for this woman who did some incredible things throughout her life.
And I think that was great too for our kids to see that. So again, what I appreciate about Harriet Tubman is she's using these things that really would be a hindrance that we would think in her favor.
Yeah.
And that is why she's such a great spy during the Civil War, is because no one's paying attention to the short, small black woman. She's like the bottom of the totem pole that people think A, knows anything or can be of any value or to be of any threat. So she's the perfect person to gather information, to lead a scouting party, to lead the Underground Railroad, because she's the one you're not looking for. She's not even on your radar. Harriet Tubman will see her sister sold away from her, and she will see her enslaver dies, and then she's sold away. The woman becomes the owner of the plantation, and she can't afford to make ends meet, so she starts to sell her enslaved because they're...
Which is some of Harriet's family.
Yeah, resources, yeah. Right? And so Harriet's done.
Yeah.
She's like, I'm done with this.
So that's it.
That's it. And she just basically just walks away one day. I think that's amazing. And she just sings a song, and she walks away. And she takes her brothers with her.
I'm gonna leave you bound for the promised land. I'm gonna leave you. I'm sorry, I'm gonna leave you. Farewell, oh farewell. But I'll meet you in the morning. Farewell, oh farewell. I'll meet you in the morning. Farewell, oh farewell.
And they put out an ad for her in the paper. This is 1849. So this is right before the Fugitive Slave Act comes out. And the Fugitive Slave Act of 1850 really starts to separate the country, because it becomes a law that if you don't, you may not be an enslaver in the northern states or even in the southern states, if you don't help catch runaway slaves or you do anything to hinder the capture of runaway slaves, you could be held liable by the law, which means they could take your property and put you in jail. And so people get very mad about that. Like, how can you put that onus on me,
right,
if it's not something that I agree with?
Yeah, it's a horrible law.
Why should I? So this is when people really dig in their heels and the Underground Railroad really gets more solidified. So what is the Underground Railroad? I think I tried to explain it in the video, but I don't do a very good job of it. So this Underground Railroad is basically a underground network of people who help enslaved people escape. And it starts pretty early, I'd say about 1830, and probably even before that, but it gets more solidified in 1850, where it really is a network. And it's not underground, but it's underground because you can't see it. Like railroad tracks you can see. This you can't see. People just know it. People who conduct themselves know where these safe haven houses are, or these places that you can hide out, and so they can know the routes to get to them. And I've talked before, there was an Underground Railroad stop in Memphis, and its identifier was two trees that don't lose their leaves. And so they had two big magnolia trees in their front yard, and magnolias don't lose their leaves. And so even through the winter, they would have these two trees. So that would be a way to identify that house for the Underground Railroad in Memphis. Plus, they're on the outskirts of Memphis, and they were livestock owners. So lots of smells coming from the area would keep people away. So that was a perfect stop for the Underground Railroad. Most of the time, Underground Railroad would also have, think of Anne Frank hiding away during the Holocaust, hidden bookcases, hidden basements, yeah, hidden rooms where you, if somebody was to come and say, I saw black enslaved running by here, can we search your house? Sure, because you have them hidden away in a secret room. And so that was also very well known with the Underground Railroad, was these secret rooms and places that people could be in the house and collect resources, rest as they make their way. And most enslaved are making their way into the northern states. But with the Fugitive Slave Act, it didn't stop enslavers from coming for you in those northern states. So some of them went even further on into Canada.
Yeah. And I thought it was neat. Again, the Visitor Center does a really good job of kind of showing the whole span of early Harriet Tubman through the Civil War and the Underground Railroad. And then after the Civil War and a bit of her later life, but showing the maps and some of the known paths of the Underground Railroad were pretty expansive, and going to the big cities and then making a little bit more of a beeline for north up into Canada.
Yes. So it says here that she escaped for the first time September 17th, 1849. If she's born 1822, she's 27 years old. Yep. And she's making her first escape. And then she comes back a couple more times to get the rest of her family, 70 members in all. And because she knows that area so well, she's able to come back and get them and get her family members, because that's the tie, that's the tether to the area into freedom. But then when the Civil War breaks out and she's going further down into the South to help get enslaved out of their predicaments and their enslavements in the Southern states during the fighting.
Yeah, much further south in Maryland.
Much further south in Maryland. And that's when she works with the military. And that's when she starts to become a spy, because she's given this pass that kind of gets her to move between the North and the South lines, because she can portray someone who is enslaved.
Yeah, that's how she passes.
And that's how she's passing. She's passing back and forth between these lines, and she's able to get people through. And again, nobody's noticing her.
Yeah, she's 5 feet tall. She's female. And back then, she's African-American. So she's all the things that a soldier would basically immediately dismiss.
Yes. So from 1851 to 1862, she returned repeatedly to Maryland, again, rescuing some 70 slaves in about 13 different expeditions.
And I thought one of the things that was really interesting was when she led that military, I don't know, it was an expedition or kind of mission. And I mean, they set free hundreds of people and dismantled Confederate this, that, and the other, and took down some plantations. I mean, she helped lead a pretty serious military effort.
Yeah, so that was in 1863, and it's called the Combahee River Raid. So she used her knowledge of covert travel around the Port Royal area of South Carolina. And she was down in that area. And she guided three steamboats with black soldiers under Montgomery's command past the mines on the Combahee River to assault several plantations. Once ashore, the Union troops set fire to the plantations, destroying their infrastructure. And forewarned by the raid by Tubman's spy network, enslaved people throughout the area heard the steamboat whistles and understood they were being liberated. So she had made sure they knew what was going to happen before it happened. And then she came down there and led these men of the, I think it was the 15th South Carolina, and then to show them where to go. And then she helped liberate those people out of there. So she watched as those fleeing slavery stampeded towards the boats. She later described the scene as some kind of chaos, but as the Confederate troops raced to the scene, the steamboats took off with more than 750 formerly enslaved people.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. What she did was really groundbreaking, and more than 100 of those newly free men, black men, join the Union Army.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah, you mentioned that. I don't know if that made the video cut. Yeah. But you said that, I mean, they escaped and then they joined right back up to
they
start fighting.
They joined right back up to fight.
That's
so
incredible.
This is mid-war, right? This is June 1863. And reports of her involvement in the raid led to people calling her General Tubman.
Oh, really?
And I think John Brown had called her that previously, so people joined in on that. But she's widely regarded as the first woman to lead U.S. troops in an armed assault. And that, for me, was pretty just monumentous and important. That's why we left the flag there for her, because what she did for American military, but also in American history, she really was a groundbreaking, changing woman.
I thought it was so neat too that she's born in 1822, died in 1913.
Yes,
and that's quite a. We've talked about a couple of historical figures that have been born in that similar era, and talk about a period of true drastic change mm-hmm. over the course of 90 years. Right, think about after the turn of the century. Right, we're looking at World's Fairs now, and we're looking at she was at the front end of the suffrage movement, right, when she was in her much later years.
Yes.
Think about where she came from and as she passed where the country was.
Yeah, I mean, she really did take her agency upon herself and change her life. And in the interim, she changed anyone's life she really came in contact with as well. I mean, I really do think she is a Renaissance woman. She did what needed to be done in pretty much every instance. She conducted an underground railroad that needed to be done, spy for the Civil War that needed to be done. She led a militia because that's what needed to be done. And we know her at Fort Monroe nursing soldiers and formerly enslaved that were there because it needed to be done. And then when she eventually will end up in upstate New York. And she is part of the suffrage movement because that is the area where the suffrage movement really gets a hold. And it's what needs to be done. So she starts giving talks and giving her experience and putting the face behind African-American woman as part of the suffrage movement. So I just feel like to go where it all started and to be there and to be in the space, which is very important to us, and to honor her. And it just was an amazing place to visit for Walk with History. I think it's an important place to go to, and I just think she's a woman that deserves to be celebrated.
Yeah, and if you are in the greater DC, Baltimore, Maryland, kind of Northern Virginia area, we made a specific effort to drive almost 4 hours to get there, and it was worth every minute on the road. It was absolutely worth it. Even if this isn't your kind of typical foray into what you're doing on the weekends, I would recommend this to someone because it really was powerful kind of learning about her story and learning about where she came from, what she did, and the impact that she had on history. Well, folks, that brings us to the end of our journey through the life and legacy of Harriet Tubman. I hope you found it as inspiring as we did. Standing in Harriet's birthplace and exploring the museum truly emphasized the incredible strength and bravery it took for her to fight for freedom, not just for herself, but for countless others. Her story is a powerful reminder that even in the face of immense adversity, the human spirit can persevere. If you'd like to learn more about Harriet Tubman and the Underground Railroad, we've included some resources in the show notes for this episode. Thank you for joining us on Talk with History. As always, if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing, giving us a review. It really helps us grow and continue to share these important stories. And remember, we rely on you, our community, to grow, and we appreciate you all every day. We'll talk to you next time.
Thank you.